WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Even members of Congress who insist that it's not about sex have had to find words they feel comfortable using in public to describe sexual conduct. Our linguist Jeff Nunberg has been listening to the debate.
There was a curious sentence in the New York Times the other day in an article about the Senate maneuverings just before the Clinton trial. The lawmakers raised the allegation that Mr. Clinton groped Miss Willie. It took me aback seeing that transitive use of the word grope nestled in the midst of all the discreet formality of the times. Of course, that sexual sense of grope is perfectly good English. In fact, it's been around since Anglo-Saxon. But it's lived all that time in the shadows of private life, and it's not a word we use when we're talking about sex in an official capacity. Now, I can understand why the Times was led to use grope in that way. What other word could they have used? Merriam's defines grope in this sense as a synonym of feel up, but that one isn't fit to print either, at least not in a periodical that likes to style itself as the newspaper of record. And while I suppose they could have gotten away with fondle, that doesn't have the same lubricious overtones. I mean, you can fondle your daughter's hair, but you couldn't very well grope it. In a sense, this is what the whole Lewinsky affair keeps coming down to. From Clinton's own testimony to the Starr report to the presentations in the House committee and at the Senate trial, everybody keeps running aground on the problem of finding public language to talk about matters that belong exclusively to private life. You could say that's what got Clinton in trouble in the first place, the difference between the public and private understandings of what it means when you say you had sex with someone. Of course, Clinton was right to say that he used the word sexual relationship the way most Americans do. There was a big flap the other week when the Journal of the American Medical Association published the results of a survey that showed that 60% of American adolescents refused to say that oral sex constituted having sex. The journal's editor was forced to resign for interjecting the journal into a political controversy. But it's hard to credit that the survey would come as a complete surprise to the members of Congress. They passed normal American adolescences, after all, and if you believe the press, more than a few of them have kept a hand in since then. You'd assume that they have native command of the American sexual vocabulary, coming on, doing it, and of course the eternal jog of the bases, first, second, third, and beyond. We didn't ever mention crossing home plate when I was an adolescent. Maybe out of superstition, it would have been like talking about a no-hitter while the game was still going on. But we're obliged to disown these words when we become parents with adolescents of our own, with the result that our public language leaves us with few resources for talking about sex as if we knew what was going on. Listening to the trial last week, I kept wishing somebody would try to remind everybody what the story was really about. What if Charles Ruff had said to the senators, "Excuse me, but do the words going all the way mean anything to you people?" But of course, that wasn't about to happen. People can only talk about the affair in a mixture of clinical terms and circumlocutions as if the matter under consideration were utterly alien to their experience. Listening to the presentations by the House managers last week, you had the impression of hearing a committee of Eskimos trying to describe a surfing competition. The process reached its peak in the presentation by Bill McCollum of Florida, who managed to use genitalia 3 times, oral sex 3 times, and breasts 4 times, excusing himself profusely on each occasion. It all wound up sounding far more prurient than any locker room conversation could be. People have compared the Senate trial to a daytime talk show, but that has it all wrong. On the Jerry Springer show, they talk about sex in English words, the way any ordinary adolescent does. Whereas, when you listen to somebody like McCollum, you think of a hall monitor reporting to the principal on a couple he's caught getting it on in the prom cloakroom. It's no wonder the public finds the whole business a turnoff, and let me say that it pains me deeply to have to use that term. The Republicans know that, of course, but they can't seem to keep themselves from going there. It's as if they have a kind of political Tourette syndrome. And from the sound of things, it could go on for a while longer before we manage to grope our way out of it.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist at Stanford University and the Xerox Palo Alto Research Center.